You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
Hey, what's up, everybody? This your girl, a blind chick. I think this is episode 7. Well, as you know, I always start off telling about my week. It's been pretty well. I actually did my first speaking engagement on the 13th. Shout outs to Walita Benson and Open Arms Support Group. I want to shout out everybody on her team, her son, her brother, her cousins, her daughter, her granddaughter that helped put that wonderful Christmas party together. The food was amazing. And I was just honored that she wanted me out of all people to speak. I was her first speaker as well as her first young entrepreneurial speaker. That's what she wanted me to do, so I did it. I got 30 minutes to speak, and I'm just very grateful. So I want to shout out her support group, Open Arms. You can find her on Facebook at Open Arms Support Group. And if you are blind or visually impaired out there, of all ages, no matter if you're young and blind, middle age, older, it doesn't matter. She welcomes all. And she updates her page with valuable information about her meetings and things that's going on. So I just wanted to say thank you on air to you because I really appreciated that. But today I have a guest. Her name is Margaret Nguyen. She is a mobility instructor for the blind and visually impaired. So hi, Maggie.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for having me. So I'm going to let Maggie, I'm going to tell you how I know Maggie first. I met Maggie because she became my mobility instructor over the summer, and she's the reason why I'm more comfortable with my cane and walking outside and crossing side streets, and she's the first person to actually get me to walk to a major street, and it was Grand River. And she's really, really, really good at what she does. So thank you for coming. So how long have you been a mobility instructor?
So I have been a mobility instructor. I technically have been certified since September of 2011. So that was after I finished grad school. And I have been working in the Detroit area for almost 4 years.
Okay. So I know you, with me, you did like a little private contracting with me after your official job. So do you have any more clients as of right now?
So I work full-time for Leader Dogs for the Blind, which is a guide dog organization in Rochester, Michigan. Mm-hmm. And then I do part-time some contract work with the state of Michigan. So when the state of Michigan has clients in the local area, they'll send me those folks, and I'll work with them on nights and weekends. So a little bit here and there.
Right. So how long have you been working with Leader Dog?
So I have been at Leader Dog for almost 4 years. It'll be 4 years in May. So about 3.5 right now.
Okay. And I know you've worked in other states. Did you do mobility in other states that you worked in?
Yeah. So I worked for a nonprofit organization in Pittsburgh. And then I also worked for a nonprofit in Chicago.
Okay. So which do you like better? Did you like working for Leader Dog or... is it all like you liked it equally?
Each experience has been really different. So at Leader Dog, the program allows the clients to come to us, which is really great because they can get between 25 and 30 hours of direct instruction all within 1 week. So a client arrives on a Sunday and they leave on a Saturday. Mm-hmm. But in that Monday through Friday range, they're getting upwards of 5 to 6 hours of direct instruction.
Right.
So it's a really nice kind of packaged deal, whereas other places that I worked, I would be meeting with clients for maybe 1 to 2 hours each time, and that might only be once or twice a week. In Pittsburgh, it was usually about 3 to 4 hours a week. So
okay,
just very different experiences in each place. But, yeah, I liked them all pretty much equally.
Okay. Yeah, because on my... beginning episodes, I believe my second or third I talked about like canes and things like that. Like I do like a history fact at the end of majority of my shows where I just tell someone blind in history that's changed history, or it could be a history fact, something local doing with blindness. But I talked about the canes because a lot of people that see me with the cane either don't know what it is or they think it's some, I don't know, they just think it's just some type of stick. They want to know why I'm walking with it. And, or they don't really sometimes understand that it takes a lot to use the cane. Because I know when I first went blind, before I got the mobility instructing, I didn't know all the stuff that goes with using the blind cane. It's like a lot of stuff that goes with it. Like when you came out, I didn't know it was a certain way you're supposed to hold it. And, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
And I try to advocate to people that, you know, it's a medical device for me because without it, I can fall and it detects certain things that is in front of me. So, I really appreciate the way you teach because you teach in a very simple way. You know, some instructors that I've had or have, even when I could see, they don't always know how to explain things in like the most simplest form. And for me, I need the most simplest form, you know. So, and then I also, you know, I did a history fact, like how long the cane existed and things like that. But if people wanted to come out to Leader Dog, do they have to be signed up with like the Bureau? Your guys are just strictly a nonprofit, right?
Yeah, so one of the great things about working for Leader Dog as an organization is that we don't take any like state or federal funding for clients.
Mm-hmm.
So our clients have to meet certain minimum requirements and fill out an application process. But when it comes to being contacted with their state agency, we don't require that because all of our funding is coming from donations, from right. corporate sponsors, from generous people in the community. So a client has to fill out the application with our client services department,
mm-hmm.
And that requires a medical form, a vision form, an application about where they travel, what they aren't currently doing but want to be doing in the future, as well as a short video that shows them going up and down the stairs to show some of their stamina, as well as a route that they're doing. Or even if it's that they're not doing a route, having them walking with a human guide so that we can get a better idea of what their environment is and what their pace is and their physical ability.
Okay. And I also, when I spoke about a little about the cane before, I told people, a lot of people think that if you want a guide dog, you could just go get one. You know, even I thought that when I first became blind, like, oh, you just, I don't know how to get one, but I'm sure that if you want one, but that's not true. You have to be cane trained first. You have to know how to use your cane before they allow you to get a dog.
Absolutely. So in order to be accepted for a guide dog, it is a little bit different at each organization, but most of the organizations have very similar standards mm-hmm. that a person has to meet. So they have to have had orientation and mobility training. They have to have a decent amount of routes that they do on a regular basis and have the physical okay. stamina to keep up with a dog. And of course, we do like match pace and the amount of pull that someone would be able to handle with their stamina, but they have to, you know, be in good physical health in order to work with a guide dog because it's very challenging work.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I've seen a lot of people with the dogs, but not a lot of people, I take that back, but it's only certain people that I see with dogs. And I see a lot of older people with dogs. Like when I went to the mini adjustment, a few blind persons that have been blind for multiple years have dogs. But then again, I ask certain people and they don't want a dog. So if you do get an animal, what type of dogs do they usually train for at Leader Dog?
So at Leader Dog, there is Labradors,
mm-hmm.
Golden Retrievers, lab golden crosses, and then a small amount of German shepherds.
Okay.
In German shepherds, it's a small amount because those dogs require a little bit more work, and that doesn't always fit someone's lifestyle.
Right.
Where a Labrador or a golden retriever might be a little more willing to go out for a mile walk in the morning.
Right.
And then hang out for a few hours at the office, go out at lunch. Same thing, hang out at the office while the person's at work, and then, you know, do another mile route or so in the evening.
Okay. And I know I remember seeing a person with a poodle. Is that only in certain states?
So certain guide dog organizations do use full standard poodles and some poodle crosses.
Okay.
And the reason for that, I believe, is generally that they are non-shedding dogs, so a little more hypoallergenic for certain, you know, populations of people that just don't want to deal with that, or if they're allergic to dogs. But Leader Dog has consistently stayed for a while with the Labs, Goldens, and the German Shepherds, just based truly on the success rate of the dogs.
Okay. And I always, like, people always ask me, and I never knew, like, the truest statement on this question to answer it. So when you see somebody with a guide dog, are you not supposed to touch them and things like that? Like, how, what is that rule for that?
So it is such a personal question for someone who has the dog, right? So if a dog is in harness, that means that that dog is working. And
okay.
in that case, you would not want to touch the dog.
Okay.
If the dog is, you know, sitting at the person's feet, it's out of harness, it's just relaxing, it still is best to ask the person if you can touch their dog.
Okay.
Or if someone invites you to touch the dog, of course, you know, that's good too.
Yeah.
But generally, yeah, you don't want to touch someone's guide dog. You want to always ask. And especially that goes for, like, giving a dog a treat or, you know, any type of engagement like that.
Okay. Because sometimes I've seen, like, certain people have told me, like, well, you could train any dog. And I tell people, like, no, because some dogs are, like, too aggressive, like a Rottweiler breed. Or I know some other breeds are, they say, why you can't train any dogs? I say, because some breeds are just too territorial for that.
Yeah, and historically, some of the guide dog organizations did use, like, Doberman Pinschers and things like that. And now you're going to see most of the guide dog organizations across the board primarily using Labs. And that truly is just, like, the temperament. And most of the organizations also are breeding. They all have their own breeding programs.
Uh-huh.
So there's certain standards that have to be met with that, too.
Okay. And then also, to let people out there know, these dogs are extensively trained. Like, they're not allowed to like, get on top of furniture and beds and things like that. They have certain commands that they follow to use the bathroom. They have to be on a schedule. So,
yes.
Yeah, on a strict schedule. So, my advice, because when people ask me about the dogs, do I want one? I wouldn't get a dog right now and at the age that I am. If I get a little bit older and I get a little bit settled in my career and things like that, then I may get a dog because I'll be more on a pattern schedule. I just, you know, get up. They have to get up at 6 o'clock in the morning. You have to walk them. You just can't, you know. They're on us like a strict, tight schedule because the point is you're on a schedule, they're on a schedule. As far as veterinary care, I get asked a lot of questions like that too. So do you guys provide, when you give the dogs, any type of help with that if the person cannot afford it?
So I think that when a person graduates, I believe that they are sent home with a certain amount of, like, starting off with, like, the heart guard and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure of all the exact details.
Right.
But it is the person's responsibility to provide veterinary care. So it's estimated a minimum of $700 a year is what a person can expect.
Okay.
If they're obtaining a guide dog, in the sense of food, just kind of those primary vet visits, you know, very small amount of, like, bed and toys. So any pet owner knows that 700
right.
is a very small number in comparison
yeah,
to what pet ownership really can be, or animal
right.
ownership.
Yeah.
So, yes, a person at Leader Dog would have to be responsible for their vet care. The nice thing, though, is if a person calls around and they let the vets in their local area know that they are getting a guide dog, a lot of times vets will provide a discount for a service animal.
Oh, okay. No, that's good. That's something that no, that's really good. So, because veterinarian care is very, very expensive. And to let people know out there that you can get pet insurance. But I'm going to tell you how pet insurance works. Pet insurance works, you pay every month, but when you go to the vet, it's a situation where you have to pay the money up front, but then depending on the veterinary insurance that you go through, you get so much of the money back. So you can expect a check back, but you have to pay the money up front. It's kind of not like human insurance, but it does help because at the end of the day, you can expect something in return from paying up front. I only know that because I had a Shih Tzu when I was little, and my auntie gave me the dog after she had her kids. She couldn't really focus on the dog anymore, and she had pet insurance on both her dogs. So she kept that, and, you know, it helped out a lot because she got her money back. And I think both of the dogs, one got stolen, so we don't know about that dog. But the second dog lived till he was about 17. So, yeah, that does come in handy if you can afford that little extra bill, because I feel like pets are our children. And Maggie, remember our dog that you saw?
Yes.
He passed away.
Oh, I'm sorry.
On December the 3rd. He took ill. But he was 14 years old. And for a Rottweiler, that was very, very good.
Yeah, that's a lot of longevity.
Yeah. So, yeah, I wanted to tell you that, yes, he passed away. We were really sad. It's so weird going home and not seeing him. Right. I think that's the most weirdest thing ever. Like, I'm, like, moving my little feet out the way so he won't step on them. And I'm like, he's not here. Like, I think that's, like, the weirdest thing in the world. So in the event of the guide dog, now I've read stories where the dog retired on its own. Is that true?
So I'm not personally a guide dog mobility instructor, but the guide dog mobility instructors that I work with, I have heard them say, you know, over the years that a dog will let someone know when it's ready to retire.
Okay.
So if you pick up the harness and the dog's not, you know, coming and ready to work and happy, or you're calling their name and you're saying like, hey, let's go, and you're at the front door and they're not, you know, getting up and ready to go, that as the dog is slowing down, you'll know when it's time to retire the dog.
Okay. Yeah, because we've read stories on the internet how they've just stopped walking, you know, things in other states and things like that. So we were just thought that was like really, really funny. So do you have to go back out when that happens and retrain for a new dog?
Yep. So generally, if possible, they would like the working life of the dog to be somewhere between like 7 to 10 years. So that way the dog can still enjoy a nice retirement.
Right.
So when a person decides to retire their guide dog, or if a person is going to get their first initial guide dog, most of the time, yes, they are coming on campus. And currently, if it's a first-time client, they're staying on campus for about 25 days. If someone's coming back for their second or third or fourth or even more, if they're coming back as a return, then what happens is that time period is shortened a little bit. So what happens then is that person would spend that time traveling in different environments. They would have the support of their guide dog mobility instructor, as well as a lot of like just camaraderie in the building. It's a good environment for people. But on a case-by-case basis, if a person has a certain like life situation where it's hard for them to take and commit 25 days to guide dog class, then sometimes a guide dog mobility instructor will do what's called a home delivery.
Okay.
And then that time is shortened, but that guide dog mobility instructor is coming to the person's home. So, you know, let's say it's someone with small children, it might be really hard for them to take 25 days and commit to that.
Right.
But if the person, you know, has the flexibility, then we'll do what we can.
Okay. And another important question. I would like you to tell people out there, especially that are sighted and visually impaired, how important is the cane to a blind person?
So the cane to the blind person really is an extension of someone's pointer finger, right? So it's right. their eyes to the world. So when the cane goes in someone's hand, it's like you are just looking at the environment in front of you. So it's really protecting a person in a lot of different ways for drop-offs and certain things like that.
Thank you. Okay, go ahead.
So just talking about the person and what the cane means to them.
Mm-hmm.
So it really is, I think, like what you had said, like it's a medical device, right? It's something that the person, even if they are traveling with a human guide, they might still want the cane out as an identifier. So yeah. that if you're walking on the sidewalk with another person, that person's going to, you know, recognize like, oh, we're not just taking up the sidewalk to take up the sidewalk. We're taking the sidewalk for a reason. So it's an identifier. It's a medical device. It's something that's probing the environment out in front of you, making sure that you're safe, that you detect drop-offs, that you know when a stairwell is coming up, that there's a door in front, or just object identification and finding out what something is before you physically touch it.
Right, because I always tell people that things like I've seen people, we're walking, they grab our canes. And, you know, I've had someone tell me they thought the cane was a hockey puck. I've had someone tell me in the hospital, like, why are you carrying that stick? You'd rather you have a walker? You know, I have people say so many things about the cane, and I tell other blind persons, like, yes, the right thing to do is when you're walking, a person is supposed to see the cane and kind of, you know, shuffle out of your way. But, you know, you're not always going to get that person to shuffle out of your way. So, you know, even though you're blind, you have to be mindful that I've learned for the past 5 years that some people just don't know. At first, I thought people were just being funny or they were just being condescending, but some people just don't know what it means. The blind cane means. They just really don't know what it means.
Right.
You know, and I just feel like that's just, I thought it was crazy at first, but then I'm like, I can't look at it that way. I have to. That's just the part of the reason why I do my show, just to educate people.
Exactly. And that's really a person who's using a cane. There's going to be times where they do have to, you know, educate the general public on what the cane is and what mm-hmm. the cane means. And, you know, when a child asks the question, you know, to their parent, like, what is that? And the parent, you know, is like, oh, you know, come on, let's go, let's go. You know, that's a great time to educate the child instead of just shying away from the cane.
Right. Do you guys teach children?
So at Leader Dog, our minimum age requirement is age 16.
Okay.
So we are primarily working with adults, but children or young adults who are of school age, through their IEP and through their intermediate school district, they would be receiving orientation and mobility services.
Okay. Okay. Have you ever taught children, like under the age of 16?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. So in my previous roles in Chicago, I worked with a little bit more kids. About 20% of my work week was working with kids with multiple disabilities.
Okay. Is it more challenging to work with children? Even if they don't have multiple disabilities, is it more challenging to work with children than adults?
Yes and no. I think it's, you know, just challenging. Every person is so different. When you're working with kids, a lot of times you may have to take a step back and kind of explain things maybe in a different way than you would with an adult who has maybe lost their vision later on in life, mm-hmm. right? So if I'm teaching an intersection
right.
and how to cross a certain street, there's a lot less of that concept development if that person spent, you know, 50 years of their life as a person with vision and they, you know, drove for 45 years,
right.
I'm not going to have to explain you know, what an intersection is or certain aspects of different vehicles, things like that. But maybe with a child, you're going to have to kind of fill in those gaps.
Yeah, because I know with me, I needed that, like, down at the VIS, I needed that because he had Mike had a, you know, like the little intersection board with the little cars and stuff on it. And he had to kind of teach me all over again, like north, south, east, west. But I mean, when we were outside, I got it. But when he actually put it in front of my face on a picture on a board and he had me follow and like study on the map, I got it better. You know, and when you go blind with certain things like counterclockwise or following 9 o'clock, 12 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 6 o'clock, you really kind of feel like a kid because you're learning stuff all over again. But when you're blind and you're doing mobility versus being in a car or if you can see and walk, you have to pay attention to everything. Landmarks. The corners of the grass, the curbs, something that and you have to teach other people. So if you're living with family and things like that, and they have to work with you. So if you drop someone on the floor, you tell them, say, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock. And it's like, you never really notice those things when you have sight. Like, I never really paid attention. Like, you just look down at your watch, it's 9 o'clock. Or you pick up something that's in front of you instead of saying 12 o'clock. It's like, it's just like so many little incy-bincy things that I have to pay attention to now. And I'm getting used to them. It took a while. And it's still taking a while. But I'm getting used to them. But I just didn't know how much it had to do with walking with a cane. Because you see a blind person walk with a cane, you're just thinking they're moving it from side to side. But it's just so many rules with something that's just, you know, like a stick, like everybody else says.
Right. People really think that it's, you know, and not everybody, but sometimes there is the misconception that it's just a cane. It's something that someone puts in front of them. But the profession that I'm in is orientation and mobility. And when you break that down and you look at the orientation part of where am I, where do I want to go, and then actually traveling through that environment, there's so many pieces that it's not just getting from point A to point B.
Yeah.
There's so many other pieces in that. And that's why, you know, it does take time to learn and takes sometimes repetition of routes and repetition of certain skills in order to really gain independence.
All right. So what actually made you, because this field with all teachings for the blind is in high demand, but what made you, you know, a sighted person want to, you know, help someone like me, like this with visual impairments?
So probably almost any orientation and mobility instructor that you talk to, they stumbled on the profession by accident almost, or they knew someone who was in it. And really, the profession sells itself, right? You're working with people, you're outside, you're inside. Maybe you're writing some reports and doing some office work, but overall, you're constantly doing something new. You're constantly meeting new people. So I was working in the optical field in here in Michigan, and then after undergrad in Chicago, and someone mentioned to me this program that they were going through at Western Michigan University, a master's program for orientation and mobility.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, what is that?
Right.
And I looked it up, and probably within a couple of months, I had completed the application, been accepted, decided to move to Kalamazoo and jump right into it.
Okay. So, yeah, because
the profession sells itself.
Right, because I've decided to go back to school.
Awesome.
And I am going to have my master's degree in some visual impairment, but, you know, teachings, but I'm still researching which route I'm going to go into.
Yeah.
Because I know for a fact I want to teach. So I'm trying to, you know, curve my way to decide which route I'm going to go in. So with your associate's and bachelor's degree, is it just in something regular like psychology or some education?
Psychology, education, those would be good ones. We had folks in our program who are in communications undergrad, special education, speech and language. So, I mean, people really came from a variety of backgrounds. And then some of the people that I went to school with were, you know, non-traditional, mm-hmm. where maybe they had even been out in the workforce for 20 or 30 years and deciding to go back. So, you know, people really have wide varieties of backgrounds.
Okay. Because I know they also have a lot of NFB, they have a lot of conferences and things like that. Do you guys have to travel a lot for your job?
So we go to a couple of conferences each year. Michigan has a conference through AER, which is our professional mm-hmm. organization. So Michigan has a conference, and we just recently traveled to the North Central O&M Association conference, and that was in Milwaukee. Some of my coworkers just traveled to Tampa for an orientation and mobility conference as well. So it just depends.
Okay. So are the conferences, are they like regular like work stuff? Do they, is it like just seminars every day or something like
that? Yeah, seminars, lots of different booths and things to really just find out what's going on in the field, what different universities, what research they're working on, new technology. It's kind of a wide variety of things. Some of it's more geared towards working with adults. Some of it's more geared towards working with children. So a lot of the orientation and mobility specialists, some of them are also teachers of the visually impaired. So they have an education undergrad or education master's, as well as the orientation and mobility.
Okay. So if somebody out there is listening, and I know people in my life that are blind that I've met are just at their wits' end. You know, they're not blind enough to get signed up with certain organizations, but they know that they have visual impairments, but they just want help walking down the street. You know, so how can they get an application or contact you or just be a part of some type of services to get some type of help?
So there is a couple of different ways through LeaderDog. So a person can fill out the application for orientation and mobility or for guide dog training online. Mm-hmm. That's generally the quickest way to do it. Or they can call LeaderDog and then they can request an application through client services.
Okay.
In order to qualify for guide dog training, a person does have to be legally blind.
Okay.
But for orientation and mobility, we take it on a case-by-case standard. So most of our clients who come in for orientation and mobility, they are legally blind.
Mm-hmm.
But every once in a while, if someone is not quite yet legally blind, but they do have a progressive eye condition,
mm-hmm.
since we aren't taking state or federal funding, we are able to make those exceptions here and there.
Okay, because I just meet a lot of people that they're just like a lot of low vision people, and they always say, I'm not sighted enough for the sighted, but I'm not blind enough for the blind, you know, and it's, you know, yeah, and it sucks in a way, because they go to certain doctors and they tell them that, oh, you know, your peripheral view is okay and these things, but they're telling them like, no, I can't see, you know, and they just really need some type of guidance, and they just want to be able to get a cane and obtain a cane. So do you guys offer, just like if you come for training, do you guys give a cane out for free?
Yeah, so I'm going to take a step back to piggyback on what you were saying. So a lot of times, you know, people ask, when is orientation and mobility right for me? When should I start using a cane?
Right.
And we generally say the moment that you're starting to really question it is probably a good indicator that it's time.
Right.
So even if someone maybe doesn't need that cane during the day, but at night they're bumping into things. You know, this time of year, people don't want to have to, you know, be in the house by 4:30 or 5 o'clock.
Right.
Right. So generally, when you're starting to question it is when you want to start considering getting services.
Mm-hmm.
As far as our program, once a person has been accepted into the program, once they meet all those minimum standards and the application is accepted and all that good stuff, and they come in for that training, we do provide them with one Ambutech cane And Ambutech is just the brand.
Okay.
So the person does leave with a cane and a cane tip.
Okay. That's like some really great and valuable information that I definitely will pass on. Is it a specific website that people can go on to find you? Or like, is it the application just on the Leader Dog? Is it like leaderdog.com?
So it is www.leaderdog.org.
Okay.
And it's D-O-G, not D-O-G-S.
Okay.
And then if the person wants to look at the different programs, they'll click on the programs link on the top, and then that will drop down orientation and mobility. That'll drop down guide dog training, as well as our summer experience camp.
Okay.
So if you do know anyone who is going to be 16 or 17 this summer, they can qualify for our summer experience camp, which is brings in 16 and 17 year olds from all over the U.S. and Canada. And it is a super exhausting but very, very fun time where the campers get to spend a day with a guide dog and a guide dog mobility instructor. They get to go on like rock wall climbing adventures.
Okay.
All these different things, all these different experiences. Last year we played beep kickball, which was really fun. So full days. But, yeah, it's really great for a lot of the campers because they get to meet people who are their age who also have vision impairments.
Okay, yeah, because I know I believe it's the adult winter camp is in the beginning of I think it's the first weekend of February where they go, I think, sledding or skiing and things like that. Because I always let people know that blind people do everything. They rock climb. They do all type of stuff. I've never personally been to the winter camp, but I hear that it is fun. They do several activities if you can withstand
the
cold. I know it's about they catch the train to God, it's on the tip of my tongue. I think it's about 2 hours, a couple hours away from here. It's in Michigan.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. I know they leave on a Friday, about 11, and they come back sometime Sunday. And it is a cost for the camp, and it's a cost for the train. And you get 15% off because you're blind. You know, that's what they offer the blind to ride the train, like a 15% off discount. So I think all together you pay about $60 or a little over $60 to go.
Oh, that sounds fun.
Yeah, I've never been. And because they have another camp in August, like the weekend of the 25th. That's like their summer weekend camp. And I believe they have one in June as well. Because I know the kids go up to Kalamazoo in the summertime for schooling and like home training and things like that.
So that's all through the state of Michigan?
Yeah. Yep. No. Now the summer camp, the summer and the winter camp are put together by certain people. Because it's, I'm sure it's through the state, but I know it's put together by, it's organized by, I guess they have head people for it or people that like help them because I believe it's a lot of people that go to the winter camp. I know one time I heard somebody say it was like over 80 blind people.
Awesome.
So, yeah. So they go and it's just a weekend. I know they have longer week trips and, you know, things like that. But I've never personally been to them, but I heard that they're, you know, they're great. If you could withstand the heat a little bit because you're going to be in the cabin and withstand the cold, go for it. That's what I say, go for it. But I don't like being super hot. I don't like being super cold because I went to camp when I was a little kid. So, yeah, but I always encourage everybody to come out and do things. I know for the people that are visually impaired in the suburbs, you know, transportation is kind of hard. So, yeah, but do you guys provide transportation? Do they want to go up to Rochester for the school? Like, do they have to catch the...
So if someone is local, then they do need to provide their own transportation to the organization.
Okay.
But if someone is coming by plane or train, then we do provide transportation to them. So all of our services are no cost to the client.
Okay.
I think the only thing that a person would have to really worry about is if they were wanting to check a bag, then they would have to cover their checked bag on their own.
And you know what? I don't think that's too bad because everything else, your stay and your experience, is no cost.
Right. So the training is no cost to the client, as well as the accommodations. Everyone stays in a single room with their own bathroom.
Okay.
Everyone eats together in the dining room, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. So it really is some nice accommodations for the time that they're there. Because especially with guide dog training, if someone's coming in for 25 days, you know, they're really moving in to the campus.
Right. Like a little dorm-like situation.
Absolutely.
A little, you know, if you're 16, 17, the pre-college little thing to me, because you're staying by yourself. Your parents aren't there. So you're kind of first experience, like, being somewhere for about a month alone.
Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I don't think the cost, if you're local, to get your own transportation is, I don't think that's a bit much because everything else is paid for. You know, it's you can't cut costs for everything, especially if you need services that are very important to you.
A lot of times, too, like if someone contacts their local Lions Club
or
another local organization, a lot of times they're able to secure a ride there and back.
Yeah. Okay. That's great. So I know that you do a little contracting on the side. Do they have to be a part of the bureau to get you?
So I have only contracted with the state of Michigan.
Okay.
I haven't had anyone do like private pay.
Okay.
But I mean, I guess that is possible. Just the only thing that I've done is through the state of Michigan at this point.
Okay. So if you are in need of some type of mobility training out there, you're visually impaired, and you want to know any type of information, like Maggie said, you can contact Leader Dog. I have or are going to put their information on my page. I do have Maggie's card on my page if you have any questions for her. And like she said, you just can't jump and get a dog. You have to know how to use the cane. I'm in mobility. And mobility, and a word of advice, mobility training, you don't learn it overnight. You don't learn it in a week. You don't learn it in a month.
It takes lifetime learning.
Yes, because everything changes. You know, we have to learn certain things in the snow. You know, if you're just, and it's a lot of people out there that catch the bus that are visually impaired and blind, and they're awesome. I look at some of the people and I say, how can you do this? How do you do this? But at the end of the day, they've been blind since they've been my age or younger. And now they're in their 50s. So they tell me it took years to master because everything is always changing. So a light pole may be there one day, but it may not be there the next day. And that was, you know, somebody's landmark. So things just, you know, things are always changing. And when you're blind, you have to pay a lot of attention.
Absolutely. And we even have, you know, people that come back years later and they just take a refresher course.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe even someone that's been using a guide dog for years.
Right.
They still need to go out and use their cane here and there to make sure that they still have, you know, cane skills, that if the dog is sick or if they have to go somewhere where they, you know, can't bring the dog along, that they can still navigate their environment.
Yeah. Yep. And then I met people, like I said, that they've had a dog, and then their dog passed away, and they got another dog. And I know, so you also have a program where you can adopt, like, the dogs that don't qualify. They can be adopted out.
Yeah, so there are career change to dogs.
Okay.
So when a dog isn't suited for guide dog work, they'll first do an assessment and see if it's suited for another type of work. So maybe if a dog is very high energy but loves to work because these dogs have been bred for that, maybe that dog isn't suited to be a guide, but maybe it's suited for some other type of work where it's constantly on the go. So that's certainly assessed first. And then there's a certain I guess, like, tier as far as, like, who can adopt the dog. So, of course, the puppy raiser gets the option to adopt the dog. But if that person is unable to take the dog, or maybe they're puppy raising another dog, then those dogs are then available with a donation to adopt.
Okay. Because somebody's always asking me that, like, well, can you just adopt a dog or something like that? And I say yes. You do have to make a donation and you go from there. But you do get a good dog. You get a trained dog. And you know that the dog is coming from a good place. You know?
So the dogs, too, they can be career changed for a wide variety of things. You know, maybe a dog had, you know, ear infections or something.
Right.
And so if a dog has something recurring like that, we don't want to issue the dog to a person knowing that dog could cost them money in the future.
Right.
You know, knowing that is something that has happened in that dog's health history.
Right.
So a dog could be career changed for something like that, a medical issue, or maybe just that it doesn't have, you know, the right personality or the right temperament for guide dog work. So there's lots of different reasons. So I know when a person comes to the organization, there is some type of program that they have to go through before they adopt the dog, and then they let that person spend a little bit of time with the dog to make sure that it's the right fit for them and for their family.
Right. Oh, okay. Now, that's something that I didn't know. Like, if that's something I didn't know. That's a cool thing that you guys offer. Because at the end of the day, it's a dog, it's animal.
It's a big decision.
Yeah, it is. Pets are like kids. You know, they don't talk, except for kids talk, and they can't sometimes tell you what's wrong. So, you know, it's an expense. And I always tell people, if you want to eventually get a guide dog or get a pet, period, make sure that's the right decision for you, whether it's a dog, a cat, a fish, a turtle, because they need attention.
Right.
And you don't want to mistreat them, because you wouldn't want anybody to mistreat you. Because I'm a big advocate on not abusing any type of animals. It makes me cringe to see when people leave dogs in the car. It really hurts my feelings when people do that, because you're just being honoring and evil for no reason. So just don't say, oh, I want a dog just because it leaves me around. It's a lot to it, and it's a big responsibility.
Right.
It's a huge responsibility for it.
And with the long cane, you know, you can hang it up behind your door and leave it there for a day if you need to.
Right.
With a dog, it's going to be that constant responsibility.
Yep. Yeah.
So even with our, you know, our younger clients, and really with all clients, we always talk to them about, look at the working age or the working life of the dog, mm-hmm. and look at your age and think about what's going to happen over the next 10 years of your life, and do you want that guide dog to be alongside with you? And for some people, that's, you know, a definite yes.
Right.
And for someone else, if they're looking at maybe, you know, 4 years of college and, you know, potentially having a child or whatever it may be, if they want that added responsibility. But at the same time, you know, as cheesy as it is to say, you're able to walk with, you know, someone with you.
And so then you have a companion. And then you have a companion as well. And it's really hard. I've asked people with guide dogs not to spoil them, because at the end of the day, they're so cute. You get them as puppies, and, you know, but you also have to stay fit to that as well.
Right.
So I want to say thank you so much for giving me and everybody else all this knowledge on a Rochester Leader Dog, your information. It's just, I just appreciate you coming.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Will be seeing you when I get done. I think I graduate from receiving in February.
Wow, awesome.
Yeah, so I will see you and yeah. So I want to thank you for coming. Like I said, I have Maggie's information on my page, A Blind Chick on Facebook. If you have any questions, I'm sure she'll be a pleasure to answer whatever. If you are blind and visually impaired out there, please walk with your cane, because I was hard-headed. I fell down the stairs and et cetera. The cane is just that important. It is really make your life better. So I know some people out there that are low vision say, I don't need the cane. I can still do this. You'll be surprised why you need it. She just told you why. I'm expressing to you, please use it, because I know a lot of people out there that are low vision and that are blind that, you know, they're still in the stage if it's an embarrassment. But it's not. It's make it a part of your life, because it's very, very important, because it can protect you, you know. It can really protect you from harming yourself. That's the biggest thing. So I want to thank you again, Max, for coming.
Yes, you're welcome.
Do you have any Facebook information or anything you want to tag yourself?
If someone wants to follow Leader Dog on Facebook, they are always constantly updating that.
Mm-hmm.
And then toll-free, you can call Leader Dog and ask for client services. That number is 888-777-5332. And client services would be able to mail out applications for all the programs.
Okay. Thank you so much for tagging yourself. So far, you can also follow me on A Blind Chick, where you'll also find this information. Follow me on Instagram at A Period Blind Period Chick. And like I always say, I holla!